First to questions of leadership in this new world order. Germany's Angela Merkel delivered a forthright message to President-elect Trump, and the words matter, as you'll hear. Germany and America, she said, are bound by common values, democracy, freedom, as well as respect for the rule of law and the dignity of each and every person, regardless of their origin, skin colour, creed, gender, sexual orientation or political views. On the basis of these values, I offer the future President of the United States, Donald Trump, close cooperation. Now, her remarks may have been designed to soothe the local constituency. Germans appear quite apprehensive about a Trump presidency. The relationship between Germany and the US has led to decades of peace and stability, whereas now questions abound, including whether a Trump-led America would honour NATO's principle of collective defence. So what is Germany's place and Angela Merkel's role in this new world order? Last week, the New York Times described the German Chancellor as the liberal West's last defender. Quite a responsibility for a leader facing her fourth election in the new year. Well, joining me now to discuss these issues in more detail is Josef Janning, Senior Policy Fellow and Head of the Berlin Office of the European Council on Foreign Relations. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Is Angela Merkel ready to be the defender of the liberal democratic tradition? By all reports, she's a rather reluctant leader of that type of role.
I don't think she is, and I don't think she wants to be. You know, she doesn't want to hide the core values and principles that her policy is based on. So she spoke out on them, as is obvious. It is partly for home consumption, but she does want to make clear that she believes, and actually this is shared by many other European leaders, that a multilateral world, a world of cooperation, a world of a structured international order that is governed by treaties and rules and institutions and processes, is a better world compared to one where great power calls all the shots.
Why is she so cautious? And is she a proxy for a wider German sense or not?
Well, she is cautious because that would be punching over Germany's weight. Indeed, Germany has been kind of overestimated over the past year, ever since the refugee crisis broke. You know, kind of the media were portraying Merkel as the Nobel Peace Prize winner already. She wasn't even a candidate. You know, and some 6 weeks ago, you could read in the same U.S. media that have elevated her that her government is about to collapse. So I think for her, it is rather risky to become part of this maelstrom of exaggerated expectations. So she prefers a more collaborative, a more integrationist, and a more multilateral approach.
I just wonder whether, in fact, quite a lot of the rest of the world, including Europe, might be ready for her to sound a little more sure of that role, particularly with a Trump presidency. So that's sort of a contrast to what you're proposing.
Well, yes and no. You know, on the one hand, there is the expectation that somebody has to tell it to the U.S. president, and that somebody should be Merkel. And I'm pretty confident that she will do this. But she doesn't want to do this as, let's say, the leader of Europe, as the one person who would claim to be running the show in the European Union, because that would make her life so much more complicated. So she readily is an informal spokesperson and is ready to make her point on this with anyone, but she doesn't want to be seen as above or beyond the framework of European policymaking that she believes is so essential for Germany.
What kind of challenges do you say that a Trump presidency, therefore, presents for Germany?
We'll see a Trump presidency that is really Trump, you know, and not a form of watered-down Trump. We will see one that doesn't pay much attention to these multilateral or regional integration institutions. Trump doesn't want to split Europe. That's the misunderstanding of Farage or Le Pen. But he doesn't also want to unite it either. You know, he doesn't care about Europe. So the Europeans have to make clear what the added value of their cooperation is, because the American president would not automatically want to understand. Secondly, Trump has a very transactional approach to alliances. He believes that the Europeans, as much as the Japanese or the Koreans, could very well defend themselves. So they should. and they should bear the burden of defense. This, for Europe, means that the Europeans, they have to now face the challenge of building a credible defense themselves. There needs to be more integration. And that is a very complicated challenge for the Europeans.
I wonder if the absence of almost, you know, the US as big brother means that there's a vacuum which now they've got to fill and really, dare I say, stand on their own two feet in terms of their defense.
Absolutely. You know, this is one of the neglected benefits of America's European role, that, like it or not, the United States mostly has acted as a go-between, you know, as someone to neutralize and ease the many differences, tensions, animosities, and rivalries that still exist between European nations. Now, with the big brother announcing a retreat, all of these hurdles of deeper cooperation come to the fore,
yes,
and they need to be addressed. You know, thinking of defense, for example, the Germans have to face the fact that the Poles still mistrust Germany. They don't have any reason to, but they do. So how do you overcome this? You know, how do you build common defense structures on the basis of mistrust? That's probably not going to work. So, you know, this, is, I believe, is the most serious challenge that Trump poses to Europe, and he even doesn't know it.
Yeah, so in other words, it's bringing things forward that had to be dealt with at some point.
Yes.
The relationship with Russia for Germany, that seems a very curious one in the light of what clearly appears now to have been quite a relationship between Putin and certain key members of Trump's people. So how do you see that playing out?
Well, for Germany, this is a very sensible issue because the Germans try to maintain a sort of a special relationship with Russia's leadership because there has been a tradition of German-Russian relations. And it is has always been an asset of Western policy that the German chancellor would have an extra access to the Kremlin. It has become increasingly difficult and has generated less result over recent years. But Merkel is determined to still keep trying. So there is no other European or Western leader in contact with Putin more often than she is. And she does that because she believes that eventually there will be a chance to kind of influence decisions in the Kremlin only if you keep in that constant dialogue. Now, with Trump coming in, who prefers this kind of strongman to strongman direct exchange, things might become more complicated. Probably from a German perspective, a President Trump could be willing to accept Russia's annexation of Crimea if there was something that that Trump really wanted from Russia. Good for Germany that Trump doesn't seem to know what he should want from Russia, and it's not clear what Russia could actually give to the United States that would be meaningful. It might be a policy change and solving the business for America in the Middle East, in Syria in particular, but that is too early to say. But you know, in any case, this will be watched in Berlin with great attention.
So I wonder if you could compare and contrast for us the shock over the Brexit decision versus this one about Trump getting in. I'm just getting a sense from you that, you know, maybe the Brexit one was even more of a drama.
Well, the Brexit one was a drama because it is so close to us. And actually, Merkel almost takes it personally because she believes that her European vocation as a chancellor is to keep this Europe together because it is the most responsive and best political framework that the Germans have ever had in this Europe. So she must not be the one who presides over the disintegration of the European Union. And in that sense, Brexit was a real blow to her because for the first time, it demonstrated that you can roll back the integration process. So far, the belief was that we're progressing always, sometimes slowly, sometimes faster, sometimes standing still. But eventually, we're going into the direction of deeper integration, of more union. And now, evidently, we are negotiating less integration, less union, with the departure of the United Kingdom. So that is not just a very significant decision for Britain to take, but it is a very significant development for the European Union. And Merkel now must think about what she would need to do in order to control the evidence-centrifugal tendencies in Europe.
And what about the business of regional defence then, and whether, you know, if the NATO, if his plans, Trump's plans about pulling out of NATO hold true, there's going to have to be some form of European army in there, is there not? That seems a million miles from where Merkel would like to be.
Yes, well, interestingly, the perspective of a European army as a longer-term goal is part of the formal coalition agreement of her government. You know, Germany is one of those countries where actually the idea as a long-term goal is fairly mainstream and rather popular. If you put it on a short-term agenda, it is much more divisive. But as a general goal, as something to be achieved over the longer run, it has wide acceptance.
Oh, I see.
It doesn't have that similar acceptance around Europe. But I think when Europeans are faced with the fact to actually organize territorial defense for their union, the scenario changes. Now we have a number of EU member states that feel quite acutely threatened with the policy and posture of Russia in their immediate neighborhood. We have three member states of the EU still, you know, when you're counting Britain still in, spending two-thirds of all of the defense spending of the EU-Europe, which probably is unsustainable. No? It is the many smaller countries account for one-third, and that means that we have about 15, 16, 17 operetta armies on the European continent, which is a huge waste of resources.
Look, finally, China has been a significant trading partner for Germany and a major investor. The Diplomat, we see, reports that in the first 6 months of this year, China invested $12.1 billion in Germany. Of course, we're very used to Chinese investment here in Australia too. But there are tensions, I understand, emerging in that relationship too. So what would a Trump presidency mean, in your view, for German-China relations?
That very much depends on how the U.S.-China relationship will evolve. It looks like China will be the principal object of Trump's new approach to international trade. If the United States and China engage in a trade war or in a showdown over their trade policies, the fallout will reach Europe and it will reach Germany. The Germans, as many Europeans, are rather concerned that the economic development between Europe and East Asia at large would be deeply disturbed by a President Trump trying to teach the Chinese a lesson on something that is not really thought through. In Germany, there is a bit of concern growing because the Chinese investment into Germany, unlike Chinese investment into Australia, goes into high-tech companies. That seems to be a state-organized takeover initiative to get access to the most advanced technology, particularly in machine building, which is one of the export strengths of the German economy.
And very
it's
interesting.
One of its core technologies because it affects so many other areas of industrial manufacturing. So the suspicion is that the Chinese actually may want to squeeze out the German market leaders in many of the machine building areas by simply buying up their technology, transferring it to China, and kind of leapfrogging in the development of that technology in China proper.
How interesting, the different anxieties. In this country, it's about land in particular and our agriculture, and you're talking about advanced technology. Dr. Yanning, that was a very interesting overview. Thank you for your time.
You're most welcome.
Josef Janning, Senior Policy Fellow and Head of the Berlin Office of the European Council on Foreign Relations.